What you are listening to is real. The participants are not actors. They are real people with a case pending in podcast court. Hello, I'm producer Peter, and welcome to Cage Match, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage, podcast court. Today's case is between a drunk with a good heart and a drunk with a good heart.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
So I think my cat's gone completely deaf.
I was going to say, it wouldn't be a regular Cage Match episode without you yelling at Taco at some point.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm just testing at this point. So she's gotten really good about screaming the songs of her people at all hours of the night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm woken up at least 3 times a night by this cat.
Pete and Rico have a new thing. Speaking of songs of their people. They've just been sitting at the bar going, "Ay, Chihuahua."
Holy shit.
Oh, my God.
Why does Pete think that he can do that?
Well, technically, Pete was doing it first and then Rico started.
Yeah. OK.
Because they're both stupid and I love it.
So I just recently was reminded of the term Flanderization.
Hmm. Is that where you unnecessarily left hand something or
yeah, right.
No, where it's like in a long running show where a character just gets like simplified down to like its most basic premise and then just becomes like Ned Flanders. I mean, that's where it comes from. It's just like
all of us,
you know, a 3-dimensional character becomes like just the one thing. And that happened to Rico real quick.
And now he's a person.
I miss the hat mostly. So, Carlos, these are people that you don't know at all or give a shit about. So that's great conversation, right? Okay, cool. Well, Carlos, welcome. Thank you for being here.
It's good to see you again.
Yeah, thank you man, it's been a while. It's been a few years, man.
Yeah, ever since you decided to leave me for DocuSign.
We were going to make you sign a DocuSign and then thought it was maybe too
rude.
Yeah,
we were
going
to send you an NDA.
It's okay. DocuSign dumped me, so don't worry about it.
Certainly no hard feelings.
Right.
No, not at all. After 8 years.
So how do you and Nick know each other?
We go back to the Hollywood Lights days.
Yeah, we were warehouse office schlubs. Schlubs?
Schlubs. Schlubs.
Right. Yeah, I moved to Seattle back in, 2014, and then started working at Hollywood Lights and met Nick. You know, he showed me the ropes. Was it the right way? I don't know, but
I've been calling my penis the ropes for at least 9 years. I'm learning that today.
God, I hate that that's a good joke. Oh man,
it's all downhill from here.
So yeah, that's how far back we go, man.
But you're back down in California where you have avocados and you don't have to endure the months of rain that we're currently starting up.
No, I know exactly. It's been nice having sunshine for 300 days out of the year, having fruit trees in my backyard. Gotta love it.
Yeah, that's how we know each other. We work together.
Great. Good job. Nice introductions.
We work and drank together.
Yeah. But before we work together, you've done other like cool things. So like, okay, I'm always excited because you used to work with IMAX, like screening films or something, right? Like how did that job like really work out? I like to talk about this one because it's super weird. Because you watched movies for a living.
No, that's cool as fuck. I want to know all about that.
No, absolutely. No, I worked for IMAX in their post-production, digital post. So we did all the 3D, 4K conversion for all their feature films. So basically, I sat there, did all the conversions to DCPs and digital certified packages. Our certified digital cinema packages.
I've got a certified package.
I bet you do.
It's a duke.
It's analog though.
We basically had to QC them, basically watch them, make sure there wasn't any sort of digital hits. I definitely specialize more in the subtitle aspect of it. So I have to watch the movies in multiple language subtitles, sometimes 4 times a day. Sometimes
same
more.
Movie?
Same movie.
Did you know all the languages?
No, we had a script in that language and we just followed it along.
Oh, okay. Oh, you didn't just like stare at it and kind of go, yeah, that makes sense. I'd buy that one. Like, I don't know. It's got all the right curves.
After a while, you do recognize, you know, oh, wait a minute, this isn't Japanese. Cyrillic isn't really Asian. You start recognizing the characters and you know when something doesn't seem right or fit.
What's the worst movie you had to watch multiple times in one day?
And why was it Leaving Las Vegas?
I would say either Australia with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman. Fuck,
that's right.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, that was also like critically panned too. It's like one of those things it's like, yeah, bad movies are bad movies. I want to know what your least favorite movie was that you had to watch multiple times that people thought was a good movie.
We definitely did the anniversary for Titanic and I had to watch that because it was converted to 3D, right? And the 3D subtitles, and that movie is long. So I had to watch that movie, I think, 3 times in one day.
That's kind of suffering.
That is more than an 8 hour a day.
How do subtitles work in 3D? Do they come at you? But like, is they can't just stay in the background if shit's in front of it.
No, they, so in the beginning, we had to manually adjust them on the screen because they had to be on the right axis, right? And then after a couple of years of subtitling companies, they figured out the formula and how to make those subtitles land on the right axis on the screen. So it's not behind. So when I first started, actually, I talk about bad movies. The first movie I had to work on was Green Hornet with Seth Rogen.
Oh, nice. Oh,
yeah.
I had to sit there and manually adjust just about every subtitle that popped up because you had to make sure they were not sitting behind, you know, the picture. They had to be in front of the picture. Yeah. But yeah, it was watching movies over and over again. Lone Ranger was another one I had to watch multiple times.
Oh, the Johnny Depp with fucking the people eater.
Yeah. I love that both of them are like old TV remakes or old like radio play movie remakes that are just like nightmare stories.
I had a friend who I think we're going to have on eventually who his first job was working at a local video rental store, and they got like 8 copies of Halle Berry's Catwoman in, and they had to make sure they all worked. So his first like week of work was just watching Catwoman. I'm pretty sure they were fucking with him, but that's what he got paid to do for a week.
God, that movie's so bad too. Just ordering a fucking white Russian, hold the everything. It's like, you just want milk? Yes.
I love the concept of getting up to change the movie and just swapping out one Catwoman DVD for the next Catwoman DVD. It's like, oh, finally it's over. Let me just put in the next film.
Catwoman. And she begged me in that movie too.
Oh, that's rough. I'm surprised they didn't get her Catwoman into The Flash.
Oh God, that would have been so bad.
I mean, it couldn't have hurt that movie any.
No.
Fair enough.
Okay, so back to IMAX 3D films. Nicolas Cage has done 2 3D films in Drive Angry and Ghost Rider 2. Did you get to watch either of them?
Nope.
I don't think they made an IMAX version of those.
That's a shame.
A lot of them weren't made an IMAX version. They would just, so they would shoot them in 2D, and then we'd get all the reels and convert them digitally to 3D. So,
oh, okay.
So we would get reel by reel, and then we would go ahead and import all the files, and they'd start basically syncing because it's double images, right? So you have a left eye and a right eye. So once we get those files in,
don't tell me what kind of eyes I've got.
Two right eyes.
And then we would start basically compressing them, the files, and then having the left eye and right eye being compressed, and that can take, you know, overnight. So hopefully you compress them correctly. So the next day somebody gets those files and starts ingesting them. Otherwise you fucked up.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. It happened. That's before I moved to Seattle, that's where I bought a quit, because it happened with a Clash of the Titans, the remake, the reboot.
Caligula.
I think it was Clash of the Titans. That would have been a
Malcolm McDowell just busting.
Was that the one that like notoriously just had the worst 3D ever? Like it just like didn't work.
Caligula?
Yes.
Just one boob doesn't translate to 3D.
Always weirdly inverted.
Jumps back and forth between like
I mean there's no good place to put this in, so I'm just gonna put in welcome back to Cage Match colon a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm Sean, right? Here with my co-host
Nick. I'm Nick.
And our producer
Peter. Hello.
What is going on right now?
Joined by Carlos.
Did you guys just get quieter, or is that just me?
We got sadder, I think.
Yeah, once we moved on from
Yeah, now we have to actually talk about real shit. Fuck.
Oh.
So Carlos, have you seen Leaving Las Vegas before?
I have. And as a matter of fact, I'll be completely honest, I just did a rewatch last week.
Oh, I knocked it out first thing this morning. And that is a weird one to wake up to. Because I'm like, well, I've got some chores, but I'm going to be sad during them.
Yeah, no, I had seen it when it first came out. And
in 3D?
In 3D, yeah.
Yeah, he had a left and a right eye.
Whoa!
I saw everything stereoscopic. It was amazing.
What year did this movie come out again?
I think it was 95 or 96. So what did you think about it the first time you ever saw it? Because this one completely missed my radar when I was that age, because I was 11.
Yeah.
This would be a weird movie to take an 11-year-old to.
My 7-year-old loved it.
Yeah, but he's cool.
Right.
Yeah, so what was the post-theater reaction to something like that?
I mean, I liked it back then. I thought it was really good. I thought Nicolas Cage was awesome in that movie. And then, you know, you rewatch it, but almost 20 years later, no, God, 30 years later, Jesus Christ. And I'm like, why Elizabeth Shue? Why that casting?
Yeah, I mean, she kind of embodies empty inside, and I guess that works, but
I mean, you're not wrong, but that's a brutal statement. Yeah, I watch her act and I just think nothing. I kind of forgot how jacked she is in this, though. Like, she's really fucking fit.
Oh, sure.
Still look at that the cover you did, Peter, of Nick and I, and I look at those I look at like the arms and I'm like, I wish my arms looked like that, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Those are good arms.
Good arms. Strong enough to lift a Nick Cage, probably.
Do 100 Nick Cage benches.
You just got to start working out your arms 6 inches at a time for a good 30, 40 minutes a day, and you'll have great arms as well.
There you go. That's a jerk off joke. Sorry, that's a hand job joke.
Yeah, it's still a job. And in today's America, we need all the jobs we can get.
I got to get my job.
So Carlos, you saw it originally. I mean, it didn't make like a major impact on you, but you did think that it was a good movie. What was new for you on rewatching it 30 years later?
Why Elizabeth Shue?
Okay, fair.
Still Elizabeth.
No, definitely a little bit over the top at times. The whole Russian mob thing, I was like, what is this all about?
That is a kind of weird thing to just have in there.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I was amazed at how many faces I'm like, oh, he's in this movie, oh, he's in this movie.
Did you see French Stewart?
Oh yeah, like when Diedrich Bader shows up in the beginning.
Diedrich Bader, Danny Houston, there's just like a lot of fucking faces.
Yeah.
Wait, you mean French Stewart, right?
French Stewart, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Diedrich Bader's not in this movie.
No. The other one.
They're the same. Yeah. One has eyes open, one has eyes squinty.
Look, one was on the Alien show, one was on the Drew Carey show. It's fine.
One still has a career.
Yeah. Also, I think Diedrich Bader is going to be in the Hallmark original Chiefs-related football Christmas special as well. Mm. So, obviously, nailing it.
Yeah, okay, so he's made some choices in life, and now he needs money. I see what it is.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, Laurie Metcalf is the landlady at the fucking hotel.
Right.
You know, like, these are all great castings for that time period, too.
Richard Lewis,
Richard Lewis.
Right.
You're like, holy shit, he looks alive.
The guy from Wings, right? He's in there.
Yeah, Steven Weber, yeah.
Mm. Which one's a Steven Weber? I've never seen Wings.
He was also in the remake of The Shining, the made-for-TV remake.
You're not helping Nick here.
Yeah, I haven't even finished watching the original Shining.
What?
It's long.
Watch it in 3D to check the subtitles.
that might be what I
Steven
need to
Weber,
do.
Steven Weber. He was one of the guys that was having dinner with Richard Lewis.
Lewis was the agent, and Steven Weber was, I guess, a new client, and they're hitting up those chicks at dinner. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of things that I saw, and I'm like, wow, I don't know if this movie really holds up nowadays. I still think Nicolas Cage is awesome in it.
Yeah, his performance is, I mean, understandably incredible.
Well, yeah, he won the Oscar for it. I know Nicolas Cage, just the way he delivers his freaking... just any character, he's gung-ho, man. I don't know. I know he gets a lot of shit, but I think he's fucking great whenever he gets the right role, even the wrong role, to be honest. You know, he deserved that Oscar for that role.
Well, I was thinking about that this week with his, like, just there is the, if you're not an aficionado of Nick Cage, you have, there is the, oh, Nick Cage is a bad actor. He's just the guy who makes like and loud noises.
But do then that
you
one
look
again,
at a
please.
Role like this, or you look at the other movie we watched, Joe, it's just like, there's so much depth to what he can do. And then you get a character like this in Leaving Las Vegas, where it's such a good and subtle performance at times that really does allow for him to just like scream and throw tables. And it's kind of the best of like everything he has.
Yeah, no, I think he approaches everything, you know, fearlessly. He doesn't give a shit. I'm just going to do it, you know, and that's, you know, coming from an acting background, that's the guy I fucking do. I think, you know, there's been other performances where I've watched him and I'm just like, where did he come up with that shit? Even just little like roles, like in Kick-Ass. I fucking loved him as a dad in Kick-Ass.
Big Daddy.
Yeah. Little subtleties, you know, that he has that just like are awesome. But yeah, this movie was definitely different from previously what he had done. So seeing all this when I first saw it definitely blew me away, and watching him again, I'm like, yeah, he deserves it for that role.
Yeah, there were two things that really stood out to me, and we've talked about it before in the past, but like his ability to play drunk in a scene is second to none. I mean, like, Colin Farrell spent most of his early acting career being fucking blasted drunk and acting. And
that's because he's Irish, though.
Right. And then he got sober and he still is a great actor. And Cage, you know, in this case, he like did all this deep fucking dive work on getting super drunk. And like what he was able to do is actually turn that into something that is real and feels accurate. And the second thing that I was going to say is that this really does kind of blow me away every time, is that like you shouldn't like him. Like, he is a guy who, fine, your wife left you because you were a drunk, and you lost your job because you were a drunk, and you decided to kill yourself because you were a drunk, and you're still kind of like rooting for him. And that's a testament to, I mean, some of it is script, but you know, some of it, or most of it, is him. You know, he fucking just crushes it as this character that you have sympathy for and empathy for whatever reason, even though he's like not a good dude necessarily.
He's not necessarily a bad dude.
No, not a bad dude. Just like a lost fucking soul. Yeah. You know, like, and he's kind of a shitbag to her, you know. He doesn't have to try and fuck that prostitute. sorry, sex worker. He chooses to do that in one of his drunk fugue states, and that like is what fractures his relationship with her. That's a shitty thing to do, but he still has all these other things about him that seem to redeem him. It's an interesting role for sure.
No. And you know, and you get that in the beginning when he's being let go from the agency, when he's like, you know, this is too generous. And they're like, we liked having you around, which goes to show that he was a well-liked guy. He just, you know, hit some rock bottom depression. And the thing is, we never, I mean, did his wife leave him because he was a drunk? Is it ever, you know, discussed that she left him?
Right. He even poses the question like twice of like, am I drinking because she left me, or did she leave me because I was drinking? Like, so it's always kind of open, and I've not finished the book. Clearly I got 20 pages into a scene that was like way too heavy, and I was like, I'll come back to this. This isn't a lunch break story.
And closed forever out the window.
It's sitting next to my computer at home.
I know we've talked about his performance in this and how he like studied his own mannerisms when he was drunk, which is why I think it is so naturalistic. It's one thing to like act like, oh, this is how a drunk person acts. It's another thing to videotape yourself blacking out so you know how you act when you're drunk.
It's like a dancer, right? You dance in front of a mirror to see if you're hitting that move, hitting that, you know, that point. So same thing with acting, you know, you definitely want to do, you know, get in front of a mirror, see yourself, see if it's being delivered, you know, believable. You know, there's a lot of stuff that he's done in the past that impressed me so much. And as far as his ability to act, and sometimes people just look at him like this crappy actor who's not that great, you know, just is a one note actor. But I disagree. I think he's has so many levels to him.
In that vein, I think it's kind of like unfortunate that he gets so maligned as like a bad actor because he's in movies like this. But then like, if you say Christopher Lee, everybody's like, oh yeah, Christopher Lee, he's a great actor. Well, fucking Christopher Lee is in Season of the Witch. That was a weird syphilitic king. He's like he's a working actor also. He's just in garbage movies all the time.
Well, and again, I don't think we have that. We don't really have that concept of a working actor in this country. Like Hollywood has made it like, you know, you have to be a star. There's no credit given to just, and you know, outside of TV, just people who just do the job,
right? And that's the thing. It's like I've heard more people say, "I don't want to be a star. I just want to be a working actor. I just want to work, you know, for my craft, get paid for my craft."
Well, sure, you got to say that for a little while because you're not a star. Like
you don't want to look like an egotistical asshole.
Yeah, you're just like, no, I'm in it because I love doing it. It's like, no, motherfucker, you want to get paid too? I want to get paid.
Absolutely, you want to get paid, you know?
Trying to get that big podcast money.
Yeah.
I'm next, Joe Rogan. Watch out.
I can't wait to sell out.
People are going to be talking to us in a make or break presidential situation in 28. Trust me on that. You can take that to the bank.
Russell Brand 2028.
Ooh, we're calling it now. Let's go. Oh, let's elect an English person.
Why not? Fuck the rules.
I heard rules don't matter anymore. There are no more rules.
Yeah. Who cares? Whatever.
Okay. So we agree Nicolas Cage is a pretty good actor.
Agreed.
He did it this time?
He did. He kind of nails it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm finally sold on it now.
It only took us 3 years, but we got there, guys.
Yes.
But what do you think of the movie in general?
The movie in general?
Yeah, direction, cinematography, anything. Music.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly music.
Let's get that out of the way real quick. Yeah, both Sting songs sucked every time they played them.
It's definitely dated, man.
Oh, my God. It's so hard. Like, as soon as the music came back on and Josie was like, okay, I gotta go. It's like, fuck, I wish I could leave. Damn it.
It's like Mike Figgis playing sax is not the fucking vibe that I need for this movie.
Okay, what's worse as a repeated song in a soundtrack? This Sting song or the Black Eyed Peas in G-Force?
G-Force Boom Boom Pow. Oh, God. I don't know. I think I'd rather have Boom Boom Pow.
If they had slipped one Boom Boom Pow into this, I would have been okay.
Yeah, like the jazz precursor to Boom Boom Pow. Yeah, that's it.
It was just so overdone. I'm just like, all right. Like I said, it was definitely dated for the time. You know, watching it now, I'm just like, Jesus Christ. It's almost as bad as an 80s movie with the freaking, you know, music video montages that they did back then.
Yeah, they did a good job of depressing us early, so that way we were ready to be depressed later.
True, true. The ending also, I don't know.
Oh, like ghost hand job or?
And her last word is, I love him. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, their relationship is a tough one for me to swallow. Like, I can get into it.
Tough one for her to swallow, too.
All right, all right. I stepped in that one. I'm sorry, everybody. I get that she's, you know, she's had trauma in her life and all these things, and he's sort of this doting doofus. But, like, I just don't understand why she is so smitten with him so fast. Mm-hmm. Like, I get why right. he is with her. She's sort of this angelic creature that is taking care of him and interested in him, even though he's in this like suicide spiral. But like, why the fuck does she give a shit about him? I don't get it.
Yeah, it's certainly not because he is uninterested in sex but interested in her the person. It's like, no, I mean, like, he's just incapable of sex and he talks about it enough. Like, mm-hmm. clearly he's not looking past her profession.
What if he was actually really good at fucking?
He did tell the girl in the bar that he was.
And drunk people never lie.
Oh, I fucking love that scene too.
That scene is so good. I'm very good at sex. Yeah. Trust me, it's going to be good. I promise. I'm very good at sex.
That's how I got married.
I just wanted to talk to you because you're so good looking. I love growling my compliments at a drink and hoping some lady hears it and just gets juiced up.
How was speed dating, Sean?
I don't like the term juiced up in this context.
You've podcasted with Nick for fucking years. You know this was coming.
Oh, speed dating's fun. It's a great way to try out material, especially on like record day. I'm like, okay, I can go like try out the worst stuff and I can see what gets a laugh.
Well, next time you can try out juiced up.
Yeah, good work.
Hey, girl, I'm just here. I got 1 minute to get you juiced up. Let me hit you with some of these bangers.
God. But Carlos, you actually do have a good perspective as somebody who like has watched a lot of films. What do you think about the like overall direction of this movie in general? Because my biggest concern or biggest challenge with this one is like, I think the performance fucking rules. I think the movie kind of sucks.
I can understand that. And it's funny because I forgot it was Mike Figgis, but then I'm like, what else did he fucking do?
And what's his production company again? It's like Red Mullet or Magic Mullet. Yeah.
Red Mullet, right? Yeah. Yeah, it was. I didn't think it was that great as far as the direction goes. You know, I think
I'll say that like with the direction, there was one thing that this rewatch I found they do a pretty decent job. Like, I mean, the story's been rearranged a bit for, you know, good narrative reason, but they do a pretty decent job of like easing you into how shitty of a time you're about to have. Like, they start you out with like, oh, let's like, he's drunk. Let's have a laugh at the drunk guy. And the laughs get a little smaller and smaller until like, you're just not having a good time anymore. That's a hard one. Like, why do people like this movie when it's like, I'm going to ease you into being just suffering. Upset for like, and you're upset for over an hour. By the time laughs stop, it's like, nope, we're solidly into just like, this is bad times.
They can't all be Schindler's List, okay?
Hey, man, stop it. I'm can't even mention that movie without getting me. Come on. We're gonna have a serious talk about sad stuff. You come in here with Schindler's List.
Rewatch Working for a Dream.
That's exactly what I was thinking too. That's funny because as Nick was talking about that, I was like, Requiem for a Dream. It's like, that movie is beautiful and so well done, but it's like, oh right, suffering.
Yeah. So the day we leave for our guys weekend this Friday, Sif is doing what they're calling their unstreamable series. It's just movies that can't be seen or shouldn't be seen elsewhere. And they're kicking it off with Gummo.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, yes. Oh man, do I want to be late to guys weekend so I can see Gummo in theaters?
I mean, you probably should. So there was a period of time where I was doing the faux hawk, and the first time I did it, I was like feeling kind of good. I was like, I'm glad I did this. And I walked into the Lion and Pete was there and he just goes, "What's up, Gummo?" And I was like, "Fuck you, Pete." Carlos, did you have like a favorite scene or anything from this movie?
The motel scene. He crashes onto the table and she seems so apologetic and genuine. And the motel manager comes up and is like, "Yeah, you can get the fuck out now."
We know a lot of fuck ups who come through here.
Yeah.
It was just so demoralizing, more so than any other scene for me, because I'm like, she's trying to be human for once. And this lady's like, no, yeah, I know who you are. You can leave now. Get the fuck out. And that goes back to like you were saying earlier, you know, why was she so, you know, in love, quote unquote, with this guy? But I just didn't buy as good as decent performance that she had. I just didn't buy the grittiness in her as far as a hooker. I think the casting choice was not the best, to be honest. I could have been somebody different that I would definitely believed that sort of personality and those choices more so than with her.
All right. Top three Sarah choices. What do you got?
I probably would have gone with Juliette Lewis.
Good choice.
Okay.
Probably back then. God, see, 96. Who was back then?
Helen Hunt was in a lot. It was in everything back then. That could.
We just saw Twister last night. That's funny. Yeah.
Pretty much like the same movie.
Same thing.
What a horrible movie. God, it was horrible.
I was going to say Bernhardt would be interesting, but like not hot enough for that. Yeah.
Sandra Bernhardt. No. I think at that point, well, maybe her age would have been appropriate, because she was awesome in, you know, King of Comedy, playing sort of the same role, which is one of my favorite comedies. But yeah, that'd be a pretty interesting choice.
I'd probably throw Christopher Lee in there.
Christopher Lee, he definitely could have done it.
He would have taken the role. He needs the work.
Yeah. Working actors, man, you know. Christopher Lee needs another summer house or whatever the fuck.
Actually, you know, just put enough makeup on him, he would pull off that like mid-90s Vegas hooker look.
I think you just give him the whole like syphilitic thing, you know.
Oh yeah. Oh, just straight up like he's got the plague again.
Yeah, why not?
That's fair.
You're looking for a good time.
I can't wait until another hooker knocks on my window and I mistake it for somebody just trying to hang out. That's a life goal.
Yeah, what's going on tonight?
It's like, well, I gotta go home. I just got off work, but if there's parties, I need to know.
Yeah, man, what's popping?
I'm an idiot.
So this is more a question for our side of things. Was there something that you guys really felt was new and fresh this time? I mean, this is our third official watching of this movie.
I mean, I think my decline into Dread was a little more fresh this time. It does kick off like kind of jovial enough. Like, doesn't he whistle in that supermarket? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was whistling. But yeah, then it's like, oh my God, oh my God. And then like something would happen in the movie. I'm like, oh my God, we haven't even gotten to like the gang rape scene.
I forgot about that scene. I totally forgot about that scene.
That is in the first 30 pages of the book.
Really?
I mean, the book is fairly short, but yeah.
It's only still, like 150 pages.
Right. But still like that happens fast.
Yeah. That's where I set it down, because I was like, well, this is my lunch break. So
I don't like this. Yeah. I mean, we're starting to get closer and closer to rewatches now. And it's one of those things where it being as fresh as it is, like Nick said, it's kind of, I think the Dread is just starts at an earlier place because I'm so aware of what's happening. I think I focus a lot more on the individual performances for this one more than I do like the actual story, because as we've said, it is rough. This is not like something that is necessarily fun to watch and fun to rewatch. Yeah.
You know, I noticed that it's a lot harder to drink along with him at 7 in the morning.
Yeah, that's true.
So I try to strive for authenticity.
My only takeaway is that the other times I've watched this, I've been like so checked out for the beginning 12 minutes or whatever it is before the actual title card shows up, where it's like it doesn't feel like it matters all that much to me. It's this fuck up guy, you know. But this time I watched it again, I was like, these really do set the stage for why I care about that guy a little bit more.
Those are the last moments where you get to like absorb whatever history and life he has,
right? It mattered more to me this time seeing those.
It's the only time you get to like see photos of his wife and child.
Right. Carlos, had you watched the movie Joe that this one's going up against, or have you watched?
I have not.
There's an R&B artist named Joe who's going to be playing up in the like Seattle casino areas soon.
What a fucking power play to just claim Joe.
Yeah. All the commercials have been like something, something, something. And Joe. And it's like, Joe?
Yeah, I was driving back from Tacoma, where my wife's parents live, and it was just a big sign that said Joe, and I was like,
fuck
who?
Yeah, Joe.
is that Fat Joe's new name now, because he's not fat anymore?
No, Fat Joe's still, I think, Fat Joe. Or maybe he's like reformed Joe. Yeah. But
well,
this guy was an average Joe.
What would be your like push for this movie? Like, why do you think that this movie belongs in the upper echelon of Cage movies? You know, it sounds like you've got a good experience with Cage movies in general, good experience with movies in general. Why do you think that people should give a shit about Leaving Las Vegas and watch this movie?
I think it's one of his top performances. I think, you know, top three next to Adaptation, which I thought he was freaking awesome in Adaptation. One of my favorite movies.
In which role?
Yeah, which Kaufman? Which Kaufman did you prefer?
Yeah, which one really sold it for you? And why Donald?
And why Donald? Exactly.
You guys knew that about Tim Burton and Superman with Nicolas Cage. I wish that would have come to fruition. That would have been awesome to see.
It would have been incredible. I'm a little less thrilled about the long hair from the like production stills, or like the costume stills we saw.
I mean, that was prime Superman mullet era, though. Superman had longer hair in the comics.
Yeah, it just, like, I've seen better mullets.
Yeah. Listening to Tim Burton talk about why he cast Nick Cage, his reasoning was, well, Nick Cage is a fucking alien, so you get him to play an alien.
Right. It would have been awesome to see. Just to see what he's going to do with it.
Ooh, I would, you know, I don't often argue for reboots or remakes of movies, but I would do a Nicolas Cage led K-Pax. I think I could get into that.
K-Pax, I forgot about that.
I would
movie.
Watch him like just bite into a banana sideways. Or,
well, we can't watch the original K-Pax anymore, so we might as well remake it.
On the Blank Check podcast, they were talking about how there should have been a recasting. So John Travolta was in a movie called Michael, where he plays like a fallen angel who like sucks and fucks and smokes and drinks and all that kind of stuff.
I know the
and,
life.
Yeah. And they were thinking like what they really should have done is cast him in City of Angels and let Nick Cage play Michael in Michael. Mm-hmm. And it would have been both better for both actors and their careers. And I can totally see that.
It would have been better for me, because then I wouldn't have had to watch City of Angels, which did have Nick Offerman. And that's pretty cool.
It did have Nick Offerman and Meg Ryan. Was that who it was?
Meg Ryan.
Yeah, Meg Ryan got hit by a fucking logging truck.
Pancaked by a logging truck.
That movie sucks. It's bad.
No, I think his performance is probably the main reason to watch it. I think, you know, back then it was a breakthrough for him back then, even though I thought, you know, he got raised in Arizona already. He, Moonstruck for me is one of my favorite roles that he's done. You know, Peggy Sue Got Married, freaking love him in that movie. And I wasn't a fan back then until I saw him in that movie, and I was like, okay, this guy's fucking hilarious, he's great.
Oh, Peggy Sue turned you.
Yes, Peggy Sue turned me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Peggy.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a good one to make you a Nicolas Cage fan. I like that.
Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, that's my top, you know, reason why you should watch Leaving Las Vegas. I mean, I'm sure it's fucking depressing, but
it is an incredible performance.
Yes.
And for somebody who's known for his performances to provide something that is just so like just raw and clean.
Right.
I don't know if you get, can you be raw and clean?
I mean, isn't that what exfoliating is for?
There you go. Yeah. Skin's freshest layer.
Yeah. I just hit it with that pumice stone.
That's what I was going to say, a loofah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still a great performance. Still just one of his top performances and just one of the Hollywood's just best performances, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm rarely so satisfied to be sad.
Right. yeah, no, agreed. I think one of the best performances he's had in his career. You know, it led him to buy in a castle. So there you go.
Things went well and then didn't.
Things went well, but not that well. Not castle well.
Yeah, you were Superman or Action Comics 1 castle and Tyrannosaurus Rex skull successful for a little bit.
Oh,
but not long.
Two King Cobras.
No, he doesn't have one King Cobra. He only has one Raven.
To be fair, even after he bought them, he was often only in possession of one King Cobra.
Fair enough.
I thought you were talking about the beer, the malt liquor.
Nah, he bought some Cobras and they kept getting out. So his neighbors complained because they were just loose Cobras.
Stop having open air vents, man.
Yeah. Well, Carlos, thank you a lot for coming on. I know scheduling with me is just the worst, but now we can get back to not texting each other the way friendships are meant to be.
Perfect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The best friendship to have. All right, guys. It was a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
So Nick Hornquack, officially first time on the podcast.
Yeah, and last.
Yeah, I mean, probably. Let's be real.
Let's just start off with facts.
Yeah.
I wanted to impress you, too. Dang.
Well, I mean, how long did it take you to actually listen to us? Actually, let's go back to the beginning.
All right. Let's do
tell
this.
Me about the original listening experience to Cage Match, because obviously we were in our darker days being our starting times. But
yeah, short version is I first listened to your second episode. I think it was Adaptation, and I forget the other one.
And Army of One. Remember that name?
Yes. Okay. And I was so upset over how you treated Adaptation that I vowed never to listen again and to find better friends. But then
neither of those things happened, though.
And then you proceeded to do nothing but go to the same bar every day.
Yeah, that'll happen. And it turns out meeting people is hard when you do the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. And so I just eventually
just do what I do. Skip town.
Now, thinking about it, actually, I was
pretty sure you learned that from Hornback.
It is true. I have done this move before, just closer. But yeah, anyways, so I first listened to the Adaptation episode and Army of One, and then I was very upset. It's kind of the short version. And but no, recently I've listened quite a bit more and enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, I should probably hang out with you guys. And so
I'm glad that this podcast is what made you feel like you wanted to hang out with us.
Yeah,
that's the worst reason to decide to be our friend.
Not the 5 years of friendship, but just listening to us talk in a room without you.
Yeah, about dumb nonsense.
It made me miss you guys. And yeah, so fair enough. All right. Yeah.
And then you got the joy of coming on for arguably the most depressing head-to-head that we've had so far.
Oh, no, I'm excited about this, actually. Great. I truly am. I've always kind of loved just depression moods in general.
And I knew sadness would be the hook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And both these are obviously really sad movies. As I was walking over here, it was a really dreary November day, and it really just set the mood right for both these films. And ultimately, I do strongly believe that Joe is a much more depressing movie than Leaving Las Vegas. And so for that reason, I thoroughly enjoyed both, but Joe is by far better.
Wow, getting right into it. All right.
It's nice and strong. I will agree that Joe definitely comes out arguing to be a stronger sad film, because you are told from the beginning that Nicolas Cage is going to kill himself through drinking in leaving Las Vegas from the beginning. Like, you just know. So if you're upset at the end that he does exactly what they tell you he's going to do, it's like, well, you need to change your expectations.
It was on the tin.
Stop trying to fix people.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, also Joe is very depressing from the beginning as well. And, you know, it's like, you know, this is not going to be uplifting.
Especially with how many times they have happy, uplifting scenes. You just know, oh, man, this isn't going to work out.
I mean, there's a couple, but ultimately, just about every scene I do find is just soul crushing and sad in that movie and in the movie Joe. And whereas I would say Leaving Las Vegas is it's a sad subject matter, but it plays to me like some kind of Hollywood romance where you have like, will they or won't they, you know, is she going to save him? And, you know, it felt like, you know, just this Hollywoody movie. It's depressing. Right. It's really depressing. But at the same time, Joe plays like, it's just a slice of life in the world's most depressing town in the universe.
Man, that is so accurate. Like, we've talked about it in the past too, but like the biggest drama for the most part of this, or one of the central dramas of this movie for the most part, is this assumed issue between the fucking guy who went through the windshield at 4 a.m.
Willie.
He doesn't give a fuck.
No, he doesn't give a fuck. No, not at all. And it's like he got slighted because he got slapped in front of ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. And yeah, it's like, bro, this is your issue? Like, get the fuck over it.
And like, of course, he's part
of the
drama.
Downfall of Joe. Yeah. You know, it's like, that sucks.
But
like, that fucking guy.
But I think that when you look at it, Joe is equally easily slighted by the dumbest fucking shit. And, you know, the drunker he gets, the more he just wants to react and cause problems. To me, Willie is just about as bad as Joe is in this movie, as far as like role models. I read the book for this thing, by the way, and it gets into some more background to this. But Joe is not a good person. I mean, He's good to some people in the film, but he's a very bad person. Not a role model, of course. Better than Wade or G Dog, as I like to call him.
As we all like to call him.
Yeah. Which that was, man, what a good casting choice on that. I still can't believe that.
Not only did the casting on that, but then stuck with it through like clearly dealing with a very severe alcoholic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was very true to him. You know, the thing is, and right at the beginning of the movie, you find out that this guy is just an absolute piece of shit. And I just love that opening scene where, you know, Gary's calling him out on it, this nice exposition. And then you never find out, by the way, what they want to beat him up for, but it's something, and it's probably because he's a real piece of shit. And there's a lot of filler scenes in the book where he's, you know, later on you find out he like beats a homeless man to death. And in this like book scene, he's like, he robs him, takes his like money and food stamps and stuff, goes to the store and doesn't even spend the money, just shoplifts from the store to get like more booze.
Can't use food stamps on booze.
Yeah. Well, actually, maybe that was it. Yeah, I'm sure at this grocery store you could. Like, that's not a well-run grocery store.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah. They probably are like, these are bananas.
But yeah, you know, so when you're looking at all of the scenes in this movie and all the characters in it, there's very few redeemable characters as far as, you know, not being pieces of shit. There's obviously the Dorothy, who's, well, that's
hard to be angry at her.
Yeah. Is her character different in the book? They don't flesh her out much, obviously.
She's not
in the movie.
She's basically not a character. Okay. I mean, she's silent and, you know, just meant to be sad. There is another daughter in the book, though, Faye, and she's about 17 or 18 and actually gets her act together and just leaves. And you know, that's one of the things, like, there's the mother in the story, and you always got to wonder, why is she sticking with this piece of shit? Like, she is making her children miserable because she's sticking with him. And so for that reason, I think she's also a bad person.
Yeah. My take on it is looking down like two dead end roads. It's like, well,
yeah.
Do I leave and be nothing, or stay with this guy and be nothing?
I mean, definitely from the movie performance, I definitely, you know, there's a scent of meth there.
Oh, yeah. She certainly has some kind of like substance issue in the film.
Yeah.
But who doesn't?
Yeah.
Except from Gary.
Well, and
he gets drunk.
He does. Like, yeah, a Budweiser.
That was such a fucking good scene. He drinks many beers. I think it's the abridged version of it. First beer and, you know, obviously just hanging out with Joe as Joe gets drunker and drunker and drunker. Mm-hmm. And then, like, so, you know, they just have their shenanigans together, going looking for that dog. And after a while, they're not even looking for the dog anymore. They're just like,
just buddy time.
I wouldn't even argue that they were looking for the dog initially.
Right.
Joe really loves that dog, though. But he hates the dog at the whorehouse and does not see any irony in that whatsoever.
Nope.
So, like, his dog.
That dog, no, I love bit dogs, him,
just not that dog.
That dog's an a-hole.
Yeah. And his dog isn't an a-hole. Come on. Like, yeah.
What were your first beers?
Oh, man. I had a Pabst Blue Ribbon. It was my buddy's uncle. I actually went to that guy's funeral.
Huh.
I think mine was also PBR.
Oh, yeah. You guys drank good stuff. I remember being at the grocery store with the person with the fake ID, and we got Milwaukee's Best.
Because the Beast.
We thought it was the good
the
kind.
Best.
It was
the best. I mean, it's the best for Milwaukee.
Yeah. And I remember we were just having pizzas and beers, and you know, we crack open the pizzas, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. But why do you got to ruin it with beer? Can we just get some Mountain Dew in here?
Which one did you have to chew more?
Oh, man. Yeah. Bad times.
We're going to put an actual timer on you.
Oh,
2 minute summary.
Okay.
Of Joe. Do you want to get a timer?
Sure. I'll do the timer. Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. All right. Now. Oh, crap. Okay. So you start off, you meet Wade and Gary and family. And, you know, you get to see that they got issues. Then we see Joe, and, you know, he's hanging out with his tree destroying crew because fuck biodiversity and, you know, groundwater. I mean, who needs any of that? You know, Gary's looking for work because he's a broke ass teenager and wants to get the hell out of there. Ends up hanging out with Joe a bit. You know, Joe doesn't really care one way or the other, but all of a sudden sees that Gary's doing good work. And, you know, pays him for the day. And he's, you know, Gary's like, hell yeah, I got some money. And so, you know, then he goes home and, you know, dad beats him, takes his money. And then Gary's all like, well, you know, maybe you can work too. And so goes back. And we find out that Wade is an absolute piece of shit. Okay, I'll have to go faster. Then Joe and Gary start to develop a friendship, mainly because Gary's a hard worker and Joe just needs hard work done. Then Joe's, you know, doing shit, feels sorry for Gary, you know, tries to give him a better life, fails mostly, but, you know, helps him out a little bit, gets him a new truck. Dad steals the truck. Bad things happen with Willie. You know, then everybody's sad at the end and mostly dead. Okay. How was that?
I mean, you got 15 seconds if there's anything you need to
put a cap on it.
Oh, man. Probably
5, 4, 3.
Willie goes through a windshield and doesn't give a fuck.
Nailed it. Yeah. Stuck the landing.
Sean, any notes?
No, that was pretty much it.
Nailed it. Good job, Nick.
Yeah, thank you.
I love stressful. When bad things happen with Willie and nobody has a good time.
It's been my experience.
Yeah, Willie's definitely a bad one.
His character is just
Yeah, he's repugnant.
Like, he's repugnant is that's a perfect word for it. That was rolling in my brain at that moment. I did some stage acting for a while in college, and I played a racist redneck in this one play called The Foreigner.
In Missouri?
I was in Massachusetts. There's racists there too.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
they're everywhere, yeah.
And
okay.
I played this character, and he's just like sort of he's a smart character, but he's really fucking stupid at the same time. And you get to really play that up. And it's very satisfying playing villains. But one of the things that my director chose to do was paint a bunch of my teeth with that stuff that makes your teeth look fucking rotten.
Oh, yeah.
And like seeing my mouth look like that, I was like, oh no. God, fuck. And then seeing Willie, it's just like, that's exactly what his face looks like. You see him and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Definitely don't want that to happen.
Like, the ladies and the gentlemen do not want that near you.
Yeah. So I guess wear a seatbelt then.
Nah, man, I'm not a coward.
Yeah, no, this is fucking America. Like, come on, we're free.
Rewatching this film, I was really taken with just the weird small town politics. Like, Joe smacks Willie. Willie shoots Joe in the shoulder. Willie shows up at the bar and it's just like, so we're even, right? Like, just that's how shit's done.
Yeah, let's. Hey, man, we're all tired of this back and forth. It's like, motherfucker, you shot me.
Maybe I took it too far, but, you know. Yeah. But we're cool, right?
Yeah,
it's all square, right? Yeah, yeah. What is your vibe on this town? We were talking about this with the Red Rock West episode, where it's like Red Rock West has 1,200 people in town, but they also have a hospital, like a pretty functional hospital.
Oh, nice.
Like what? What size is this town?
I feel like it's like 500 people tops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The level of like disrespect that's felt by Willie, that feels like a 500 or less town.
Yeah.
There's a small, I don't know the actual demographics for it, but there's a small town next to the town I grew up in that literally all I've ever seen there is two trailers and a bar.
Yeah.
And that is the town.
Yeah, I mean, you know your vibe at that point, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, honestly, that's one of the reasons I think the overall villain in this story is the town itself, because there is absolutely nothing to do other than get shit-faced, and that's kind of what happens to all the major characters in the story. And, you know, there's even one scene I love where it's all like, you know, Joe's hanging out with this Connie lady, and she's all like, oh, you know, we should go somewhere. And he's all like, there ain't nothing to do. Let's get drunk and
watch the weather.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the highlight of their day pretty much. And, you know, and then I was thinking, one of my absolute favorite scenes is like, she is in bed with him and,
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, she's like, I just had the craziest idea that maybe we could go out for dinner sometime, you know, and she's saying this earnestly, like, wow, wouldn't it be cool if we could go out to dinner? And then I'm all like, well, I do that like every day.
That's because you don't cook.
Well, yeah, but nobody knows how to do that. So.
Dinner is complicated.
Nobody can do that.
Do you own a pan, Nick? I've never asked you this, and I feel like I should have.
Yeah. I mean, I own a pan. I've made eggs before. Now flipping them. No, I mean, come on,
scrambled only.
Yeah. It's just
no matter what you endeavored to do, scrambled eggs every time. I've got a scrambled
side
eggs
up.
But so they're never going to go out to dinner because there's absolutely nothing to do in this town, and they're just going to get shit faced, and you know, and that's totally accepted and normal, and that you know reminds me of another thing that was just freaking hilarious in this movie is how absolutely worthless the cops are in this shit old town.
I love that.
He just slaps that fucking rookie around, yeah. Like knocks gun out of his
hat out.
Yeah.
And by the way, like, you know, he's all like giving him shit because it's like, oh, I didn't do nothing, you know, I'm totally cool. Yeah, fucking right, dude. He's like, he's pounding whiskey, yeah, and like, then like,
you are definitely drunk driving right
he's
now.
He's all over the fucking road, and you know, he of course he doesn't realize it. So I choose to believe that this cop absolutely should have tried to get this guy off the road.
Now, to be fair, he might have been driving erratically because he just got a Hummer.
Yeah, that's true.
Just got blown.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was such a weird scene, too, when he's like... trying to
what's your favorite color?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I'm just gonna focus on that snowflake.
He wants
on the
some
wall.
Intimacy.
Yeah, I choose to believe that he's desperately searching for a connection with, you know, a human being.
I think the only person he's actually like interested in is the owner of the whorehouse, Merle or whatever.
Merle.
Boy, what an unfortunate name.
Merle.
That is not a good prostitute name.
It's a good small.
I don't
town
care if you're
name.
The madam.
I feel like that's
or
actually
not.
A good madam name though.
Merle.
I don't know. There's something
about
it.
You're not going to fuck with a Merle.
You're not going to fuck with a Merle is right. Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, I'm not going to fuck a Merle either.
Well, I don't
that's
think
the
he,
problem.
I don't think he wants to.
Most people don't want to fuck the Madam.
Yeah.
He does.
He does. Joe does. Joe's old fashioned.
Yeah. Maybe it's just a Texas thing. He's got like Merle Haggard on the mind and he's just like hard. Do you think he puts Merle Haggard on while getting
Merle.
Down with Merle?
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
What's the horniest Merle Haggard song?
I wish there were more songs about like people named Nick. So that way I could listen to Nick based music while getting down.
I feel like Christmas is coming up. We got
yeah, there's a lot
Saint
of old
Saint Nick.
Nick.
Yeah.
You can only get down to Christmas.
A lot
music.
Of Christmas coming stuff. So
yeah, that's tough.
It's the only way I can nut
me.
That's a hard rhythm. Like Jingle Bells is a hard rhythm to keep up to.
There's no rhythm.
You're right. There's a rhythm. Everything has a rhythm.
I mean, no. not Jingle Bells.
Jingle Bells does have a rhythm. It's just a weird one to fuck to.
Nick's into that experimental jazz.
That's true.
Now the bass is going to take a walk.
You can't fuck to jazz.
You can fuck to anything.
Yeah.
All right.
I like silence, though.
I love banging
love
in silence.
Fucking the silence. I just want to hear my own noises.
Set up the noise canceling machines all over.
It's just white noise.
Yeah. That's what I refer to as, refer to myself as. What new shit did you guys notice this time?
I actually do have one because I watched it a couple times in preparation.
Yeah.
So the first scene when Gary meets Joe really stuck out at me. You got Joe whittling a knife, or sorry, Joe sharpening a knife.
Yeah.
And then Gary whittling his stick. And then it's just like Gary's like a younger Joe at this point. And I think that's sort of one of the main themes of the movie. And I think that one scene was a really, really good foreshadowing of that.
Right. He's also a hope for a better Joe. In Joe's mind is like, oh, he doesn't have to be a fuck up like me.
Yeah,
we can teach him how to use the lighter. He can.
I think that's true, though. That's the optimism of this movie that kind of gets lost in something like Leaving Las Vegas, is that there is this sort of like hope that Gary cannot fuck up as badly as Joe did.
And it's a manufactured scene, but they put a bookend on it in the end of the film with him now planting trees to live instead of killing trees.
Right.
So,
yeah, but I'd also say that, you know, toward the end of the film, you know, Gary's, he wants to do the justice, which means he's going to go away and get into a life of crime.
Like, right.
He wants to be the one to do it. And so I think ultimately Joe saves him from this, but otherwise he would not have been successful at, you know, maybe living a better life.
I really like was paying attention to the scene where Wade kills the other homeless guy. Just I never really looked at how
a brutal scene.
Yeah. But just like how like the build up to that, like I've either forgot or just missed like the slow intentionality behind it, like him like kicking the dirt off the chunk of metal that he can grab, and really how like that wasn't an act of desperation for alcohol. That was just like he saw something he wanted and took it. And it's one of those things where you have the scene with him like too drunk to get up, so he's just trying to like amuse his son, the popping and locking scene. It's like charming drunk, you know, nice guy who, you know, probably means well enough when he's sober. No, just fucking monster. Just really is.
Not every just, angry drunk is angry all the time.
Nothing he does is for anyone but him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true.
The other thing, just in terms of Nicolas Cage, this is just one of those films that Nicolas Cage just disappears into. Like, it's him, you see his face, but it's just like, that's not Nick Cage, that's Joe. Like, it's one of those characters you can just lose the actor in.
A really good point. And I think that fits for both of these movies too. He does really embody these two characters in a pretty powerful way.
And he has wildly different physicalities for both of them
totally,
too.
So yeah.
To put them up against each other, this is one of our bigger Joe or bigger Nicolas Cages in Joe.
Right. Versus more of a wasting away.
Yeah.
Jaundiced, falling down kind of style.
Yeah. Real Pete Styles.
One of my biggest critiques of this film, and I had this last time where it was just like, there's a lot of the group improv lines, just the quick, like try more naturalistic lines that are just bad and really do take me out of the movie at times. Like when he's talking to his work crew and every other word is just Joe, we doing this Joe.
The scene that stood out to me in not like a, wow, this is a powerful scene, but in a complete throwaway. And I was like, what the fuck is this about? There's a moment kind of 2/3 the way through where he has his new truck. It's right before he gets pulled over by the cops. And he pulls up to a stoplight and he rolls the window down because there's a woman and a guy in a car next to him. And apparently, and maybe this is a question for the book reader of this, apparently that's supposed to be his ex-wife and her new partner, but they never touch on it. The director said, oh, we want people to just assume that understanding that that's who that is. And you don't, you're just sort of like, what the fuck is this little minor interaction? Is he going to try and hit on this lady or something? But, you know, there's this acknowledgement between these two people. And then he rolls the window back up and drives on and then gets pulled over.
Well, that's interesting. I actually had no idea. He does have an ex-wife in the book and does not have a very good relationship with her. He is, trying to get on her good side and be friendly. She clearly wants nothing to do with him. It's actually interesting because there's a good parallel to the, leaving Las Vegas here. Leaving Las Vegas, he's in one of his drunken stupor kind of moments. He's all like, I can't remember if my wife left me because I was drinking or if I was drinking to get over my wife. And in a lot of ways, very true with Joe. You find out, kind of in the pages of the book that actually, he drinks way too much and she was trying to escape that. And so he's not living a good life without her. And then I guess you have the scene in the truck where he's got where she's got like this new partner, and that would be devastating for him. So now he's probably going to go on a bender. And I actually had no idea that it played out that way in the movie. So that was really interesting. The dialogue in the book, especially between Gary and Wade, it reads like Cletus from The Simpsons. Like they are very, redneck hicks. Another thing about it that is just really awesome, you get a lot more into Wade and kind of his adventures wandering around and so many adventures of him just trying to tag along with people for the sole purpose of getting booze. But yeah, say it largely plays out like the movie, though. There's definitely no smile through the pain, cool face thing. I'm not sure where that came from, but that was such a good scene. I like that.
It is.
Let's talk about that scene because it's one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
Sean, you're nailing it right now.
No one smiles through the pain like Sean.
You've got a lot of pain, I know.
That scene in particular is so fun because, I mean, it's paired with that whole like we're on a little buddy adventure kind of a thing. But like just how goofy that concept is of like feel the pain, suffer, grimace, but now smile. No, smile on top of it. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, anything? Dude? That's how you make a cool face. That's how people know you're down to fuck. What?
Yeah,
this is maybe a loaded question because, the book is obviously going to have more depth to characters, backstories, all sorts of different things.
Somewhat. Yeah.
what would you prefer between the two of them?
Oh, wow. That is a good question. I think the movie did a better job of portraying, you know, this. The book felt like kind of slice of life. It kind of downplayed the relationship of Gary and Joe, and that was kind of hammed up a little bit for the major plot point of the movie. I think that worked. It was really, really well. Definitely in the book, that's a major theme. But a lot of it is just the characters around town and how they interact. And then Gary didn't even meet Joe until like 30% of the way through the book or so. And so that was kind of weird. The movie ties it together much better than the book did. Book is great. But it's just, that was such a weird read. Trying to think of other things that are so amazing about this movie.
Actually, I'm curious about your note sheet.
Yeah, you have a lot of things written down.
Okay, so what I did
can
is,
I point at one and you just read it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
read me that part.
That was
right. Why are you pointing at his ding dong?
So read it. Read the dick.
I'd already sort of mentioned this one. It was my favorite scene of the movie when, you know, Connie and Joe are just in bed together. And, you know, she's just like, oh, I just want to go out to dinner. And then it's all like, no, not going to happen. Right. Not ever going to happen. And it just underscores to me, like, just how depressing this town is, how nobody has hope for a better future. The only way to do that is to leave. Actually, come to think of it, like that's definitely why Gary wants that truck so bad. He's just trying to get his sister and get the hell out of there.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like that's his goal, is that he is just going to take her and they're going to get the fuck out and find a way. Like he's scrappy. Yeah. He'll do work.
Yeah, he's
not afraid to get his hands dirty for right. sure.
Very good worker. Although, interestingly, he didn't really care about getting all that poison on him, whereas Wade did not want to get poison on him.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that poison is just going fucking everywhere.
Yeah, it's wild.
I had forgotten. Gary's like pumping poison out of the bucket at one point, and there's like fumes and shit. It's like
totally contaminating the groundwater. I don't think those pines are going to live, actually, at the end of the movie. And
I don't think that's even like the same site.
I think
that's
was
the whole circle of that story. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it probably is not the exact same site. I mean, they most likely killed a bunch of plants, killed a bunch of trees 3 years ago over there, and then waited, let it go fallow, and then plant new shit. But
I was reading stories about like tree poisoners, because I was all like, this cannot possibly
incredible.
be a real thing. And then, like, you know, some person got caught a few years ago trying to clear out some trees with some poison to get a better view on their property, and they had to do this whole like big soil reclamation project where, you know, they had to, like, you know, totally dig up like tons of the
like
soil,
literal tons. Yeah,
because otherwise like nothing would ever grow there, because like this poison. And so I don't think they care. I don't think Joe gives a shit about any of this, because, you know, he's not a moral guy is the thing. Like, he treats people around him that he likes well, as long as they don't have a dog. But like,
well, so long as it's not that dog.
Yeah, whatever. I think every that dog pisses him off.
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, then how do you feel about the two immoral characters of these two movies? Like, you have one who is self-destructive. Yeah, you have one who is more actually destructive.
So in Leaving Las Vegas, he's self-destructive for sure. But he warns his love interest, you know, and to a certain extent, I can understand that, because like he's got his plan. You know, he's doesn't have any money left after this. All he can do is move forward on his journey.
Off this mortal coil.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he's going to die, and that's going to happen. But, you know, he's obviously not trying to take anyone down with him. So it's all like, you know, not trying to leave a mess for this lady. But of course, they kind of get into it anyway.
Well, you still want to surround yourself with men, too. Like, you don't want to, like, take somebody in who's going to fight you in your last couple of months of drunkenness. Like, you just want to die.
I hear that. So anyways, then you have Joe.
We'll cut our laughter out of that.
Please, just let it be sad.
Okay, Wade would be obviously the worst person in this, probably even worse than Willy, I think.
Yeah.
Willy's obviously a very bad guy, but
like, he's bad stupid. In like the way a child can be bad.
Well, I mean, you know, at the end, he's doing some unscrupulous things that we wouldn't want. I don't know. Wade is just such a piece of shit. Like, think of like the absolute worst person that you've ever met in your life. And then imagine that they're now having a family, and then give it like 15 years later from that. And that's what this movie is. I knew a guy like this in high school that, like, you know, had a bunch of kids with his girlfriend or whatever, and would like beat her and, you know, just be like a total drunk piece of shit. And all I could think of is this guy older now, total sociopath, you know, kind of person, with like a battered wife and children, and like, it feels very real to me. Like, there is no redeemable qualities to Wade. I'm still wondering where that G-Dog sweater came from.
It's so cool. I wish I had a leather.
Yeah, no, it is pretty cool.
I'm pretty sure that is... So that's not part of the book at all, right?
Yeah, no, I have no idea.
No, I think that is just tied to the actor.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, that's what he auditioned in?
Pretty sure.
So I choose to believe he beat another homeless dude to death, and that was the sweater he was wearing.
He could may have. It's also like a Letterman's Highlander jacket, kind of. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There can be only one.
Oh, by the way, you had mentioned how like deliberate that was. Yeah, plays out that way in the book. He is like inching closer and closer, and you know, definitely on a mission to grab the bottle, but for whatever reason, he's gonna do it by killing him. And
well, he's got a wolf in him, and
yeah, he can work. He can swing if he wants to.
Yeah.
I love how he mouths off to the you know, guy when he's trying to do legitimate work, and he's all like, I've done all the work I'm gonna do today. You ain't done shit.
I know. I love how he just talks back to that guy. He's like, fuck you, man. I done shit but drink my water.
Why am I not getting paid? Fuck you, Gary. It almost felt a little bit unbelievable if I didn't know somebody kind of like that.
People with substance problems like that are so hard to work with. I've done it a few times, and it's never good because they suck and they don't believe they suck.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of like being that far gone, is the inability to like see the forest for the trees. Like, your reality is so different from the reality other people have dealing with you. I mean, going back to like Joe's morality, I think it's the difference between, I mean, really the difference between both these characters in Leaving Las Vegas and this is, you know, their circumstances. Leaving Las Vegas, you know, successful, you know, really does have, you know, did kind of have it all, but was an alcoholic and had lost complete control to the point where his life fell apart and there was only one way out. Whereas, you know, Joe's just trying to get by, and I think he is trying to do the best he can, but like you said, like, the town is the villain, so what do you do when you have no other way out? You just survive. And I think that's what most of the characters in this movie are doing. But he also seems to pride himself on being able to, like, help his crew, help this kid. His quote-unquote girlfriend in this film is just, he's the place she goes to when her drunk mom's boyfriend shows back up and, you know, clearly has a history of molesting her, like, or assaulting her. So, like, you know, Joe is, you know, that's, I think, Joe's lot in life that he's given himself. That's his cross to bear, is, you know, he can't escape himself, but he can, like, help other people escape their situations. So I think Joe is a moral person. Just that morality has to be viewed from where he's at rather from, like, where we're at.
What is the most small town shit you guys have ever gotten into?
I mean, I never really small town, but suburbs. Broke into houses under construction to smoke weed, and came away with a bunch of like drywall shit all over me. And, you know, we were definitely not supposed to be there, but yeah, broke into houses under construction.
Nice.
Boy, I have a lot of small town shit. And in the weed theme, I used to like smoke weed on top of a church because it was nice. Accessible without ladders. And sometimes, like, I don't know why, but we'd always like bring a bong up there. And climbing with a bong is just the hard. But then like one time the pastor or whatever came out, and like, so we were like sitting there on the roof, like trying to be discreet with a bong. We did not get caught.
Wonderful. I don't know that I have any small town stories. I'm a city boy.
You can have small town stuff in a city.
Yeah.
Just in the same vein of going someplace I shouldn't have gone, just like for, you know, mild amounts of controlled havoc. San Francisco used to have this like abandoned hospital, which I think is now condos, but this old abandoned hospital that, you know, you just fucking go break into and just wander the halls. I think they filmed, what was that MTV show where like they send a bunch of kids to like a haunted place? Like,
I can't remember the name of it. I know exactly what you're talking about though.
But they filmed a season of that there. Every time we had to get in there though, because like the cops would come around and like seal up entrances. So it would get progressively more and more sketchy to get into this place. I remember the last time we went, we had to like monkey bar climb up a fire escape, like stairs, kind of like backwards, and like hoist ourselves up onto like the third story ledge outside a window and like crawl into a window like three or four stories up.
Oh, I would have just found somewhere else to party.
Yeah, that seems like way too much work.
Oh, we had a friend fall from, I wasn't there when the I think my friend stopped going after like somebody fell. Only, yeah, from like the reasonable second floor. But yeah, it was pretty sketchy. We met some nice unhoused people who were like stripping copper wiring out of the walls one time.
Nice.
Wow. And I peed off the top of the place. That was fun.
That's nice.
I do have one more where my friends in high school were my friend Tony, who thought of himself as like a young Scorsese, so like wanted to be a filmmaker. And I remember one time we were out on the edge of like just little cut out on like a little mountain road that got really backed up with traffic. And somebody thought we had a gun and like called the cops. So all our friends like went off and like were like filming something in this like restricted area. The rest of us are just sitting by the cars, like on the side of the road, and like six squad cars pull up and just cops jump out with guns and like throw us to the ground. And my buddy Tony comes running out, who has a fake mustache on because we're fucking 17.
I know 17 year olds who could grow real mustaches.
Oh, yeah.
Tony's talking to the cops and hands him his ID. And the cop looks at the ID and looks at Tony. Tony's like, it's a fake mustache. And the cop just rips the mustache off Tony.
Wonderful.
That was fun. We went to Denny's after that.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Where else would you go?
Yeah. 17. It's Denny's.
Denny's.
Yeah. No, sorry, it was an IHOP.
Okay. Yeah, it's Denny's one or the other. Or IHOP. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds about right.
Nick, give us your big pitch why this movie should win and move forward.
Okay. Yeah, sure thing. Both are very good movies. Both are very depressing movies. Leaving Las Vegas plays a little bit like just a Hollywood romance with some depression thrown in. Is what it is. I've seen more depressing. It's fine. Joe, on the other hand, is just, it keeps hitting you over and over and over again, just how awful everything is and how nothing will ever get better. And, you know, you throw into it this
a real Hornback vibe.
You throw into it this relationship that Gary and Joe has, and it feels like an actual movie. It feels like something interesting is happening. You have characters, you have people that are real, and they're behaving like kind of normal people would in these like horrible circumstances. There's so much flavor to this, everything from the things that they buy at the grocery store, if you can even call that a grocery store, to the kind of work that they do. Like the best work around town is poisoning trees. And so everything that happens in the movie, Joe, it underscores, man, this is just awful. Whereas in Leaving Las Vegas, it feels like, yeah, this guy's out to destroy himself. And yes, that's very sad and all of that. But it just feels like a Hollywood movie. It almost feels like more of a, you know, a rom-com than anything else, like a twisted rom-com, but that's kind of how I see it. And so when I saw Leaving Las Vegas, I felt, okay, yeah, it's a movie, whatever. When I saw Joe, I actually felt something. Like I felt what I want a good movie to have. I truly believe that it's a better movie because I think about it way more than I do Leaving Las Vegas. That's my pitch.
Yeah, the struggle of man versus society versus man versus self is oftentimes more enjoyable or more enduring, especially when the man versus self is like, I'm sad.
Well, life is hard.
I do understand that, though. Yeah.
She didn't love me. Now yeah. She's in a Jeep Wrangler having fun.
Listen, that guy looked good.
Yeah, I would.
Everybody looks good in a Jeep Wrangler.
Of course they do.
The top comes off. Come on.
It's part of the appeal.
My ex is just in a Subaru or a gazebo.
Well, yeah.
I'm not what?
Yeah, when they're not in a gazebo.
In a Subaru. Okay.
I hate to just completely cut this off, but we do okay. have to do our wrap-up section
okay.
Before I have to be back on parent duty.
Okay, so. Goodbye. See you later forever.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you were here, Nick. Thank
that,
you for
that
joining
That was a nice,
us.
Clean get out of my basement.
Yeah.
And like, I'll get out of your basement.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Do you have anything you want to pitch before you go?
Oh, yeah, I do open have something forum. That I need to pitch. Everybody needs to use the Firefox web browser and Linux.
Oh, Linux.
Linux.
Okay. Do we have time for this?
No. You've got 1 minute.
Okay. So when you look at operating system kernels.
I'm cutting you off already.
Wait. Okay. Just tell me about a barcode real quick. Just one.
Yeah. Give us your favorite barcode.
Data Matrix is by far the best barcode.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a solid ending. Thank yeah. you very yeah. much for coming yeah,
thanks
on.
Thanks for being here, Nick.
Okay. Everybody, Data Matrixes, Matrices.
Yeah. Yeah, it is what you want.
And Joe.
Linux. And Joe.
Joe.
Firefox.
Linux, Firefox. Data Matrix. These are QR codes.
QR is bullshit.
Yeah. We'll
now,
wait until
now
they
we can
leave
talk
before.
Mad shit. Oh. Fuck that guy. He was terrible.
Now is the mad shit time. We'll wait until they leave for the compliments.
Yeah, exactly. No, that was good, Nick. Nice job.
I'm crushing it, brother. Yeah, Nick went to the inaugural meat bucket. And
yep. Oh, man. They had a hard time.
Yeah. Nick came to the mushroom party.
Yeah, Nick because
we had the sauce.
It was pretty mellow.
That's right. And yeah, Nick did not like the massage chair.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty aggressive.
I liked it. It got in the butthole.
Yeah. Once it locks your calves and forearms in and it goes straight for the butthole and you're just like, this is the worst electric chair ever. Death by
I'm dying but coming.
A little anal shiatsu.
I learned a lot about myself on that trip, and what I learned was I like butt play.
I thought Nick did a good job.
Nick did a great job. I think both guests did a good job.
I feel like we didn't give Leaving Las Vegas as much attention that we did with Joe, but
we had the benefit of Nick having read Joe and having something new to bring to the table rather than just talking about the film itself. So there was more there to digest, I feel.
Carlos just has like industry conversation. Oh, yeah. I forgot to talk to Carlos about his Johnsonville Brat commercial.
Okay, wait. So your homework now is to ask him about that and give just a side recording, and we will just insert it at some point.
I've talked to him about it so many times. It's something that he did while we were working together.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah. And then every day when I would see him, I'd be like, Carlos has Johnsonville brats. He's like, I didn't have a speaking role.
I was just there. I enjoyed them.
I was just a dad whose family left him for brats.
Oh, all I did was bring regular hot dogs like a fool. Well, shit, I don't know. This is a tricky one for me. I've kind of waffled back and forth the last couple days. You know, I watched both these movies recently. talking to both these guys, it was interesting. It's like, I could be swayed either way.
Sure.
I think, you know, one has like a fucking award-winning performance, and one is a movie I like more, even though it's depressing as fuck.
No, that's a pretty relatable take on it. Leaving Las Vegas is, you know, critically Nicolas Cage's best performance. He does such a really good job. It's just at times I wish the role was broader. I get a little tired. I'm exhausted from watching it. I mean, it's a terrific film. He nails it across the board. You're watching a guy be a fucking mess all the time. There isn't like moments of getting it back together. So it's like a real slog. With Joe, I mean, he's a mess, but there's times where he's a role model, or, you know, he's a hero. He, like, there's just other things to grab onto for the character. It's not so much a just slide with him into oblivion. Oh no, I saw Sean blink. They're still there.
We know you're still there.
Yeah. You can't pretend that the internet froze.
No, I was just trying to put my thoughts together. It's watching both these movies and both these performances. I think we touched on this a bit with Nick about how just the real difference in terms of, like, I mean, they're both shitty people, but I mean, the characters are both shitty people, but their circumstances.
Oh, I thought you were talking
about Nicks. Oh yeah. No.
All Nicks are bad.
We've got every a moment Nick, of confusion now.
Every Nick is a jick.
Still sounds like a fucking like bad slur.
Well, especially when you say it like that. These fucking jicks.
Yep, that's not good. I don't agree with that.
In Leaving Las Vegas, you know, he's a drunk who's out to kill himself. But he's also clearly a personality people enjoy and people like having him around, which in my experience with actual alcoholics tends to be the case to a point, to that point. Whereas, you know, Joe is more of a heroic figure, whereas Joe's life is shit, but he tries to actively uplift other people and just try and stay out of trouble while he can do it. Like, the job of a role model is kind of foisted upon him. No, and it's really hard watching both these great characters and having to decide what should go forward. And I think for this one, for me, it's really going to come down to which movie I enjoy more at this point.
You touched on the ultimate outcome for both characters a little bit there. And I really enjoy that both characters have the same kind of like inciting incident for what makes them so depressing. It's like both of them is like, oh, my wife left me. Great. One of them actually is trying to do something about it to move on with their life, or, you know, continue to live a life with it.
Yeah, to be alive.
And one of them is actively just trying to kill himself. Yeah. But actually, is it actively trying to kill yourself?
I guess it's kind of a passive one. Yeah, but I mean, passively, you are choosing to do only
It is
drinking.
A choice. Like, yeah. They're like, I'm going to kill myself with
alcohol. I mean, he is choosing to kill himself. He's just decided to take the slow way, slow boat.
Ooh, could I whack myself off to death?
Probably.
If you consumed nothing and only were expelling, yes.
You'd dehydrate yourself eventually.
I mean, right?
Yeah. Imagine how rough the skin would be from like dehydration and friction all the time.
I'm just imagining like the weird puff that comes out of powder.
Oh yeah.
Just nothing.
I often wonder about the puff that comes out of powder also, but I'm always thinking about albinos. Hey, if we've got any albinos listening to the show, please let me know so I can shut up.
Yeah, tell us about your puff.
Yeah, tell us about the movie Powder and how it changed your life.
Right.
I will say, watching these movies again, the thing I walked away from these movies with this time is how much, despite how heavy the subject matter in Joe is, it is done in such a more entertaining way than a lot of Leaving Las Vegas. I can sit with this movie longer than I can with Leaving Las Vegas. Leaving Las Vegas, maybe it's how personal that journey is that just makes me uncomfortable in my own skin, but it's not a movie I can sit down again and just sit through.
I struggle with my history of being a hooker and watching Leaving Las Vegas.
My problem is that I hate jazz so much.
fucking Sting, continuing the tradition of never completing.
Yeah, completing joy for me in his music.
Well, okay, and here's what, you know, this is what it usually comes down to for us, is which one of these movies would you recommend? And if we're just going to say, you know, and either one of these movies I could recommend for Nicolas Cage, like his performance, but if I need to recommend a movie for someone to watch, and, you know, with the caveat, like, this is going to be rough, Joe, I think I could more easily and safely recommend in a lot of cases.
Each movie has their own, like, triggering scenes.
Buyer beware.
Yeah. Like, whether it's, I mean, both of them are going to have alcoholism problems.
Yeah, physical trauma, sexual assault. Yeah,
both of them have assault, sexual assault. One of them has, you know, animal abuse. Yeah, just one. Unless you count college people as animals.
Those guys were animals.
Yeah.
Put them down.
You know, I'm going to agree with you. I think in, like, this situation of, like, am I going to tell somebody to watch A or B? We've gotten to a point where it's like, we know that Leaving Las Vegas is an award-winning banger of a performance. Joe is a movie that I would recommend to people. We had Requiem for a Dream. Beautiful film. I haven't seen it. I'll back-to-back it with Gummo and Kids.
God. You're going to have a fun day.
Yeah, I'll wake up in the morning and watch Romper Stomper and Brick afterwards. But hey, man. Some people live for the weekend, okay? Don't neg on me for this. Don't rain on my parade. But Joe is a movie that I would recommend to people for the movie and for Nicolas Cage.
Embodiment of character is something that Sean brought up earlier that I think is really powerful in both these movies. But if you are talking about, like, what's a holistic movie that, like, you could recommend, it has that, and he is Joe. Like, there's no fucking question about it.
Yeah. One thing that I recently started to think about is, and this, you know, doesn't have any bearing on anything, is the opposite of environment and the, like, social depth that the character has. That won't make sense until I say, like, Nicholas, like, Leaving Las Vegas, Nicolas Cage is in a highly metropolitan area. He's surrounded by people all the time. Very isolating role. Joe, very much a very rural area, not around, like, a big urban area, but has a community around him all the time. Very interesting, just in looking at that for the two roles.
So unanimous then.
Yeah, Joe. I think we're ready to move on. Leaving Las Vegas will always be an award-winning role. Joe is a fantastic film.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Hell yeah. Well, it goes up against Pig next. So that's a cool head-to-head. I mean, I think anything at this point, you know, as you were saying to Josie the other day, is like, these are all good movies now. Like, we're in the mix of the best of the best.
Yeah, we got rid of National Treasure, so we're good.
Sorry, Ross. but, you know, it's an interesting thing to look at this and be like, watch both. I mean, you know, come argue with us. Tell us that we're wrong. Like, that's what's interesting about this discourse at this point, is that we're not talking about, you know, some of the schlock that exists in his, you know, overall oeuvre. It's like, these are inarguably his best movies. You know, I mean, there are maybe some that people would say should still be in the mix, but it's all good shit at this point. So watch both. And, you know, our pick is Joe. And I don't disagree with you guys. I think, you know, I've waffled back and forth all week, and I think that Joe is still the movie that I would want to watch.
Yeah, it's tough having these feelings early on and being like, but how do I just not vote for the Academy Award winning role? Right. But we did rip that bandaid off in very early, episode 2, so we should be ready for it. It's fine. Yeah. You know what? Don't watch Leaving Las Vegas. Yeah. I'm going to
fuck it.
You know what? Fucking forget my number, Michael Figgis. We're not doing this anymore. I'm not playing your games.
You can no longer play sax outside of my window, Mike Figgis.
Yeah. Not, at least not on weekends. Weekdays are still fine.
Weekday Figgis.
Weekday Figgis just sounds wrong.
It does sound like a sex act somehow, but also still involving a saxophone.
Wouldn't it be so cool if Paul Newton did a movie with Michael Figgis?
Paul Newman?
Yeah.
You said Newton, but...
Oh, sorry. I was thinking about Fig Newtons.
Oh, yeah.
But we could have...
As you do.
Figgis, some... Paul Newman, like Fig Newtons, but with Michael Figgis. So some Figgis Newmans.
My brain just fucking melted.
I love to say things that are so dumb.
That one took me a second.
All right. Anyway.
Put a lot of work into getting dumber.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you for being part of Cage Match. If you want to chat with us at all, we are on social media at @cage_match_pod. If you want to support us on Patreon, we are at Cage Match Pod. Special thanks to our Sparkle Buddies, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, and Bill. And to our Cage Dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Lance, Nathan, and Cameron. I did it.
Kind of. Asterisk. Once you edit all the bad parts out,
it's gonna be great.
I'm
so good
like
at that.
I'm gonna sound like a dickhead.
Yeah, I'm just gonna leave this part at the end.
Figgis Newman.
There was a
no more. We're already dead.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
We could probably throw it in the Patreon, but there's the time that I was filming that video at the car wash with the vacuum sucking me off, and the cop had to like pull over, and he waited till we finished.
Oh, that was generous.
Yeah. And then he comes up and he's like, "Do you guys have permission to be here?" And we're like from the owner? No, but we paid for the vacuum. And the cop was like, "Yeah, I saw that. I had to pull over. I was laughing too hard. We'll carry on elsewhere." And then we left and he left. But I have the video still. We could throw that in the Patreon.
Oh, yeah,
I'll share
Patreon.
That. That's fine.